One of the chants that we do sometimes is the five subjects for frequent contemplation. In the sutta, which the chant comes from, the Buddha says, there are these five facts that one should reflect on often. Whether one is a woman or a man, lay or ordained. Should cover everybody here. Which five? I am subject to aging, have not gone beyond aging. This is the first fact that one should reflect on often, whether one is a woman or a man, lay or ordained. I am subject to illness, have not gone beyond illness. I am subject to death, have not gone beyond death. I will grow different, separate from all that is dear and appealing to me. I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and I have actions as my arbiter. Whatever I do, for good or for evil, to that will I fall heir. These are the five facts one should reflect on often, whether one is a woman or a man, lay or ordained. So I think the Buddha's suggestion is one that's good to take to heart, that we should reflect on these things often. Sometimes we're not quite up to reflecting on sickness, aging, and death, but we should reflect on these facts he calls them, right? There are these five facts that are part of the truth of what it is to be human. Subject to aging, illness, death, and we'll grow different, separate from all that is dear and appealing to us. And then later on in the sutta, the Buddha says, now a disciple of the noble ones considers this, I am not the only one subject to aging who has not gone beyond aging. To the extent that there are beings, past and future, passing away and re-arising, all beings are subject to aging, have not gone beyond aging. So this is a very important element of this truth that we should reflect on, that you know we're subject to sickness, aging, death, and separation, but so is everybody else. So is everybody else. It helps us change our relationship to ourselves, because oftentimes we think, well, we're the only ones who are aging and subject to sickness. Oftentimes when we look at others, we don't reflect on others in that way, right? You know, when we start to look at others and realize that others, you go out there on Hudson Street, all those beings, every one of those beings that you saw walking down Hudson Street today is subject to sickness, aging, death, and will grow different, separate from all that is dear and appealing to them. Everyone, without exception. Every woman, man, lay, or ordained. You know, the Buddha really makes this point here. Every woman, man, lay, or ordained. He's not speaking just to monks. He's speaking to all beings. He's speaking about all beings. So all beings are subject to sickness, aging, death, separation. All beings are subject to pain. All beings are subject to pain. I mean, we could think of these four things as painful or unpleasant. All beings are subject to pain. This is what it is to be human. This is the law. This is the law, the Dharma. All beings are subject to physical pain, and all beings are subject to some, to a certain degree of unavoidable mental or emotional pain that comes from being separated from what we find dear and appealing. To some extent, that's going to be painful, regardless of how we relate to it. So we're all subject to physical and emotional pain. Now, the way that we relate to this, of course, is what's important. And, you know, our tendency, our habit is, as the Buddha says, to rebel. To rebel. To rebel when we are in pain. Another way of putting that less poetically is we don't like it. We have aversion to pain. And we hold on to our aversion, and we fabricate around our aversion. We create worlds around our aversion, stories and narratives. And a lot of the story of our lives is about how we're in pain and we don't like it, and all the other attendant chapters to that long narrative. One thing that we tend to do that I've already said in terms of the way that we rebel is we take it personally, right? We take it personally when we're in pain. You know, like, why is this happening to me? Why am I being singled out, right? We think we're being singled out. You know, maybe you saw that today, like, why is this happening to me? You know, I came here on this retreat with all good intentions, and now I'm in pain. There's pain in the body. There's pain in this part of the body. Why is the Buddha doing this to me? You know, why is this happening to me? We take it very personally. We take it very personally. And I saw this in the very first sitting of the day. I sat down, really going to knock this one out of the park. You know, and it was all this, you know, it was just all this mental, emotional tension and stress, and all of these knots just showed themselves, you know, and it was just like all this pain. It wasn't physical, really, it was that mental pain, you know, all that stress in the body. And then I started to like sweat like crazy, like, you know, and it was like I was cold. You know, like, and I just was like dripping. And it was like, this sucks. I am so miserable. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? This shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't be happening to me. You know, we think it shouldn't be happening to us, right? We think that what's happening is something untoward. This isn't the way that it should be. This isn't the way that it should be. Something's wrong. I mean, this is the way that we tend to relate to pain. I'm being punished. I'm being punished. We think that what's happening is untoward, or it isn't fitting that we should come to this day long or be in this life and experience this pain. Well, what the Buddha realized was it wasn't fitting to rebel. It wasn't fitting to rebel against the pain because that was the truth of our human experience. You know, we think that this shouldn't be happening. It should be happening. It should be happening. This is part of the truth. This is the truth. It should be happening. This is the way that it is. This is the way that it is. And it's the way it is for all of us. For all of us. Nothing's wrong. This is the truth of the way things are. You know, it's the truth of the world, or the way of the world. The Pali term is Loka Dhamma. Loka means the world. This is the way of the world. This is the way of the world. This is what it means to be a journeyer in this world. There's going to be pleasure and pain, gain and loss, status and disrepute, praise and blame. You know, this is the nature of our experience, the Dhamma of the world, of being in this world and in this human body. One of the things that we tend to think when we come to the Dharma, or when we come to practice in any kind of form, or go to therapy, or do whatever we're doing to look at how we're relating to our lives, etc. We think that, if I really practice, if I become a good meditator, I won't have pain anymore. I won't have pain anymore. This is going to be my reward for meditating. I won't have pain anymore. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. As human beings, we will experience pain. Now, the Buddha speaks to this at the very beginning of the Salata Sutta, the Arrow Sutta that we did in Sutta study. Very well-known sutta. And he starts his dissertation to the monks by saying, "Monks, an uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person feels feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain." So in other words, an uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person who doesn't practice the Dharma, who hasn't heard these teachings, experiences feelings of pleasure and pain. And then he says, "A well-instructed disciple of the noble ones also feels feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain." It's right there. Yeah. And then, of course, he says, well, what's the difference between the run-of-the-mill person and the well-instructed disciple? And the difference is that the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones, who's practiced diligently, doesn't rebel. The difference is not that we don't experience pain, it's how we relate to it. So as Dharma students, we're here, we're practicing not so that we don't experience pain, it's so that we can relate to pain more skillfully in a way that doesn't cause us suffering. So I'm sure we all experience pain today. We all experience some pain. Physically, mentally. We're probably experiencing some right now. Maybe there's the pain of the way the butt feels against the chair, or too hot or too cold. Maybe it's subtle. It's kind of like, maybe because I'm talking, you're not realizing it, but if I stop talking and you pay attention to the body, you'll start to notice where there's pain. That's kind of like the definition of a retreat, right? It's like we cut out all of these things and let's come into the present moment, and what do we meet? The truth of our human experience. This is what we don't put in the brochures. You'll come here and you'll experience your pain. And you'll come to understand it and learn how to relate to it in a more skillful way. And learn that your pain isn't a deterrent to finding happiness in this life. And we used to say, there's a difference between pain and suffering, right? Pain, you're going to have. Suffering is optional. Even the Buddha had pain. The Buddha died. And there's several suttas where, towards the end of the Buddha's life, the Buddha says to Moggallana or Sariputta or Ananda, "My back is killing me today. You give the Dharma talk. You give the Dharma talk." But I see this in myself to this day. I think that, if I really develop my practice, I won't have pain anymore in my life. And then I see how I rebel against the pain. And then I take that step back and say, no, this is the way that it's meant to be. This is the way that it's meant to be. This is the nature of the body. There will be pain. It's subject to sickness, aging, and death. The whole body is in this process of birth and death, every day. The elements that make up this body, they're in this process of disintegration. And then, as I said, there's the emotional pain that we will experience, that comes from being separated from all that is dear and appealing. There is a certain amount of necessary pain that comes from separation. all going to experience this, a loss of a parent, loss of a friend. The Buddha, just before the Buddha died, Moggallana and Sariputta died, his most beloved disciples, you know, and there's suttas where the Buddha sitting, giving a Dharma talk to the audience and say, it's just not the same without Moggallana and Sariputta here, you know, and he describes his pain in them not being there. I mean, this is the pain that comes, that's very natural part of our human experience from separation. We're all going to experience the pain of a loss of a job or the breakup of a relationship. You know, I'm in the process of leaving New York eventually, and there's pain in that. There's pain in going to be separated from friends and family and from the Dharma community. You know, there's pain there. I remember years ago there were a couple, I mean this has happened many, many times over the years, but a number of years ago there were two people in our group who had, and they were both single parents and they both had one kid. This sort of happened like right at the same time, and their kid graduated high school and went off to college, you know. And both of them, it was so painful, that separation, you know, of the child leaving the nest. What, that's not going to be painful? You know, this course is there's going to be pain there. So that's kind of the bad news. There will be pain. The good news is we don't have to suffer. The good news is there will be pain, but it doesn't mean that we will be exempted from having happiness in this life. It doesn't mean that we will be exempted from being connected to the heart. Now, if we relate unskillfully to our pain, if we rebel, that blocks us off from the heart and prevents us from being able to have happiness in this life. But if we can open up to the truth of pain and have acceptance and equanimity and don't rebel, you know, we can have a sense of ease and well-being, and the capacity to stay centered and put what's painful to the side and be able to be in the heart and thusly live with wisdom and compassion and love. It's all how we relate to that pain that's inevitable as part of being a human being. So the way to the end of suffering, the way to the end of suffering, so suffering is what blocks us off from the heart, right? And prevents us from living our life fully, right? Prevents us from happiness. The way to happiness is understanding the truth of our human experience. This is what the Buddha was interested in. What's the truth of my human experience? Once we begin to understand the truth of our human experience, that's the beginning of the journey to the end of suffering and to happiness. So the way out of suffering is seeing the truth that there will be pain, that pain is part of our human experience. This is where the path begins. I mean, this is where it began, right, with the Buddha. You know, he lived a very sheltered life where, you know, he was, you know, and of course this is why, you know, we're so interested in making so much money so we can have things that are pleasurable so that we can buy things that allow us to experience sense pleasure. The idea being that, you know, if I have more sense pleasures than painful experiences, I'll be happy in life. You know, so the Buddha lived in, you know, princely environment and had all the beautiful sense pleasures of that were available to him, and you know, was sheltered from the truth of the way things really are. You know, And then he realized there's pain in this life. You know, he went out into the world and saw sickness and saw aging and saw death. And he said, you know, it's not fitting for me to be living the way that I'm living. You know, which is really, you know, rebelling against the truth that there's pain in this world by trying to just accumulate a lot of things that are pleasurable. So the path begins by opening up to the truth instead of running and hiding from the truth of pain. To open to the truth of it. To open to the truth of it. You know, that's what we're asked to do when we come here. You know, the body is in pain, the mind is in pain. Can we open to that? You know, our first instinct is to run. You know, the Buddha said we get confused, we don't know what to do, and we start to run from it. How can I get out of this? Can I move? Can I move the body? Maybe I need a chair. Maybe I need another cushion. Maybe I need to do something so I don't feel the pain that I'm feeling. I mean, usually what we do, of course, to get away from pain, as I've just said, is go to sense pleasure, right? A day long, it's kind of tough because we're taking away all your sense pleasures. So we go to the narratives and the stories and try to fall asleep, right? Because we're avoiding being present. Yeah, we're avoiding being in this present moment, which entails an experience of pleasure and pain. That's why we work so hard on those hindrances. So can I come into the present and not go into those narratives and stories that are taking me out of being in the present moment and being here and not going into sleep? That's why for the Buddha, the hindrances were a key strategy and, you know, really, you know, where you're going to be meditating. So sense pleasure is not going to be the issue. The issue is going to be, you know, going into narratives and falling asleep. To escape the way the body is and the truth of the way the body is. When we open to the truth, when we open to the truth, and we all know this, you know, there's an element of pain in the body and we're fighting it, and then we just say, oh, this is the way that it is. Can I just be with this? We start to experience the end of suffering. You know, we're opening, when we open to the truth of the pain in the body, now we're on the path and there's a sense of ease of being, and I'm on a path that leads to the end of suffering. You know, isn't that incredible when we open up to it? It's just what we never thought would be the case when we say, okay, there is pain, and we turn to it. And we turn to it and we're open to it, and the heart knows, yeah, this is the way things are, and there's compassion. That's why the Buddha said the path begins with suffering and acknowledging that there's pain. You know, and when we do that, then something happens that's really interesting. You know, we also begin to understand that there's a way out of it. The opening up to pain leads to conviction that there is a way out of it. But when you're running away from it, you don't know that. So our practice is seeing pain and not adding on aversion. You know, being open and accepting to the truth of pain, but not adding on aversion to it. Relating skillfully with equanimity and acceptance, and learning to refrain from acting unskillfully by rebelling. Now, rebelling is the cause of suffering. Rebelling is the cause of suffering. I mean, this is something that you have to see. You know, in that sutta, the Buddha says, you know, there's two arrows, right? One is the arrow of pain. That's inevitable. It's that second arrow that we add of rebelling that is the cause of suffering. It's that second arrow. But this is something that we have to see. That we have to see. Yeah, the Buddha talks about the pain that we've all experienced in our lifetimes, crying and weeping from being joined with what we find displeasing and not being joined with what we find pleasing. Enough pain to fill the oceans, to tears to fill the oceans that we shed over this pain of being joined, crying and weeping from being joined with what is displeasing. It's not, you know, the suffering, those tears don't come from being joined with what we find displeasing. It's crying and weeping over what we find displeasing. So our practice, as always, is being centered, being centered. You know, if we can cut out some of the activity, that's going to really help us be centered and be heedful. So, you know, on a day long, you know, we're really making this effort largely to be centered and to develop our center, to be heedful, to pay attention to our experience and see when there is pain, see when there is unpleasant experience in the body, in the body, in the mind, in the mind. And to turn to it, not to turn away from it. To turn to it, not to turn away from it. Now, a lot of the times we turn away from it and then we realize, no, I need to turn to it. But you know, the more that we can turn to it, that's our practice. Now, when we have a center and a strong center, we can turn to it and, you know, we can observe it with some space, right? Because we have, you know, the ability to be centered, so there's a separation. You know, there's our pain, but there's also the breath and the ease in the body. And that's what enables us to look at it and bring insight to it. So we look at it and we say, and we see, this is the way things are. This is the truth of the way things are. This is the way that this is the truth of the way things are. There's pain in the body. There's pain of separation. And we look and begin to see and understand the drawbacks in rebelling. You know, we begin to look and see that when we rebel, that's when there's suffering. That's what prevents me from finding happiness in this life. It's not the pain. It's not the pain. It's the rebelling against the pain that prevents us from finding happiness. But we don't really understand that until we turn and look at it, right? And open to it. So we can turn and look at it and bring some insight to it. This is the way things are. This is the way things are. It begins with that. This is the truth of the way things are. And then we can incline to equanimity. You know, we have this quality of inner strength. We have this quality of inner strength. It has to be developed. It's called equanimity. This is what we're doing here today, in large part, is developing this inner strength that we have. But you have inner strength. Has to be developed. Just like the muscles that you have that can help you lift strong things have to be developed through exercise. Through meditation practice, we're building this quality of equanimity. So we incline to our strength inside, and then we center ourselves in the breath. And the more that we've developed the breath and have been mindful of the breath, the more we're able to stay right there in our center, this home for the mind that feels good, regardless of what the circumstances are, regardless of what the pain is. You know, I could see that with, like, and I've spoken to this many times, when my mother died, you know, there was the pain of that separation, but then I could come back into the breath and there was a separation. I could separate from it. I could separate from it. Because of that, I was able to work through it, you know, and be with that truth a lot more skillfully and successfully than I would have been if I didn't have that skill. So, you know, this is the place of equanimity, is the breath. You know, we're able to keep our spot. So when we have equanimity, we're able to be with. You know, it's like, what does that mean, to be with the pain? That means there can pain can be there. We can acknowledge that it's there. We can bring some understanding to it. But you know, our capacity to be with it is dependent on our ability to be able to separate from it. I mean, that's what it means to be with it. It's not like enmeshed with it or entangled with it. It's, I can be with this because I can separate from it, and I can have acceptance that it's there. I can have acceptance. Equanimity is acceptance. So the Buddha said, develop this equanimity. Develop this equanimity that enables you to turn to your pain and be with it. He said it beautifully to his son Rahula. This is when Rahula became a monk, when he was 18. He said, Rahula, develop meditation in tune with the earth. For when you are developing meditation in tune with the earth, he's talking about developing equanimity. When you are developing meditation in tune with the earth, agreeable and disagreeable sensory impressions that have arisen will not stay in charge of your mind. Just as when people throw what is clean or unclean on the earth, feces, urine, saliva, pus, or blood, the earth is not horrified, humiliated, or disgusted by it. In the same way, when you are developing the meditation in tune with the earth, agreeable and disagreeable sensory impressions that have arisen will not stay in charge of your mind. Will not stay in charge of your mind. Have a mind like the earth. Have a mind like the earth. And when we have equanimity, we're able to stay in the body. We're able to stay in the body. So equanimity is the ability to stay in the body, to stay with the breath, regardless of what the circumstances are. Generally, as I've said, you know, the tendency is, when things are painful, is we fly out of the body, right? I don't want to be in the body. Why do I want to be in this place that's painful? Let me go to a sense pleasure. Let me get to that cell phone. Or let me go into the narrative. Or fall asleep. You know, we mollify our pain through all the sense pleasures. You know, and I've spoken to this before, how it's always been so striking to me how New York, compared to a lot of places, I've been to a lot of places, you know, you just see the people on the phone all the time, all the time, all the time. And my sense of it is that it's because people are so stressed out, you know, and have so much internal stress and pain in the body that they're looking to go outside of the body. You know, I've been reading a lot of McLuhan, you know, Marshall McLuhan. He said, you know, we create an external central nervous system by using media. He calls the process self-amputation. You know, but that's what we're doing on the phone, right? It's like, this is my central nervous system, this phone. It's got everything I need in there. Well, when we have equanimity, we're able to stay in the body. We're able to stay in the body. And the more we develop equanimity, the more that we develop our meditation, the more and more we're able to stay in the body. In the body, in the body. You know, we need to be able to stay in the body regardless of the fact that there's pain. And of course, we're developing a sense of ease and a sense of well-being in the body, which makes the body a hospitable place. We can separate out from what's painful in the body, but we can also develop ease in the body or ease in the breath, so that we have a good home for the mind. And the more and more we can keep the mind in the body, the more and more we're able to connect to the heart. So as concentration gets stronger, which basically means we're more and more in the body, as equanimity gets stronger, we're more and more in the body, our awareness converges in the heart, in what the Thais call the citta, right here. So the more we're able to stay in the body, which means opening up to our pain and having a skillful relationship to it, we're able to develop equanimity, stay in the body, more and more we're in the heart. And we're able to live from the heart in support of fulfilling our wish to be happy. So our happiness in this life depends on being in this body. on being in this body. We have to come to terms with this body that's subject to sickness, aging, death, pain, and pain. You know, because our happiness depends on being in the body. The more we're in the body, the more we're able to be in the heart, and we can live from this place of innate wisdom, understanding what leads to happiness. And we can live in this place of love and compassion, which is what enables us to move forward. See, our innate wisdom understands what is in our best interests and what we need to do to be happy. And the quality of love is what informs the action that's in support of our wish to be happy. So the more we're in the body, more and more we're able to move forward in our lives, guided by the heart, by wisdom, by compassion, by love. And we're able to fulfill our wish to be happy. So let's just close our eyes for a minute.